Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store. Orleans, Cape Cod. Birdwatchersgeneralstore.com. By L.L. Bean. Inspiring you to get outdoors. LLBean.com. By Celestron. Offering binoculars and scopes for birders of all levels. Celestron.com. By Birds and Beans Shade Grown Bird Friendly Coffee. Birdsandbeans.com. And by Chimani. Visiting a national park? Let Chimani guide you. Chimani.com.
Good morning. Welcome to our show number 574. Well, here in the Northeast, the calendar says it's May 8th, but according to the Talkin' Birds Real Feel weather meter, it's actually November 8th. Meanwhile, it's unseasonably hot in some places in North America, like Alberta, Canada, where that tragic fire still burning out of control with no rain yet to help shut it down. And I just heard this morning they're not expecting rain for another week. Our own Charlotte Wasilek of our Charlotte's Weblog is several hundred miles south of that fire in Alberta, but she tells us the smoke from that distant blaze has even reached her family farm more than 300 miles away. And temperatures up there have been in the mid-80s. Pretty crazy. But for birds, spring is spring. Or is it? Here to tell us something about the effects of crazy weather and a changing climate is our friend and birding guru, David Clapp. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Ray. Good morning, folks.
Great to have you back with us here again, David. It's hard to get you back here. You're always somewhere else in the world most of the time.
Yes, it is. It's fun.
Stop by once in a while.
It's fun to be here, too, though.
Well, here in the Northeast, it is technically May, but cold and damp. What is this doing to birds in the breeding season, David?
Well, right now we're still waiting for a lot of them to migrate north. Mm-hmm. This weather has been coming from the north. It's been a little bit steady, heavy. Birds typically, the males especially, get a little hormonic, and they need to come up and establish territories, get themselves situated, wait for the ladies to arrive later. So the males are still backed up. We haven't been seeing many warblers, vireos, mm-hmm. flycatchers, orioles arrive yet. I'm expecting tomorrow, now that we've got some change in the weather around, I'm expecting tomorrow to be a big flood of birds. Tomorrow could be a really good birding day. Mm-hmm. But it can be tough on them.
Yeah. And how else is it tough on them? It's not like winter where they can't deal with the freezing temperature.
No, they're not. Yeah. They're not going to freeze. But what largely these birds that are coming up are insect eaters at this time. Mm-hmm. This time of year, they're looking for protein and for fats, and that equates to young bugs. And if you eat young bugs, you're getting protein and fat. And so they're stymied by the fact that there's no food waiting for them up here. Mm-hmm. So flycatchers show up, purple martins show up, tree swallows, barn swallows show mm-hmm. up, and there's no insects to catch flying around. Right now, if you find a group of bluebirds, they'll be sitting on a box, dropping down to the ground and hoping to pick up a beetle off the ground. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot more feeding on the ground. You get 3 or 4, 5, 6, 7, well, we had, 8 days of rain and drizzle and mist and mm-hmm. cold weather. Birds like purple martins and tree swallows often starve to death in weather like that. High metabolism, great need for food, and just no food to have.
And back a few, a month ago when it was really cold around here, the birds were kind of reverting back to their winter mode rather than getting ready for...
Yeah, they were hoping that they'd still be winter food, that there'd be seeds and fruits and this sort of stuff lying around. But even now, even for the next month or so, there's nothing much except insects and then buds and mm-hmm. flowers. So bird feeding probably for the next month or so is still pretty important.
Yeah, we'll talk with Mike O'Connor about that very topic later in the program.
By the way, every week, it's Mike.
Mike every week, yeah. It's live Mike now. This is our
live news. Mike. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Well, it's, it's as live as, no. Well, Mike is on with us live every week now. We used to do kind of a pre-recorded thing, but now we're topical with Mike. By the way, David is an international birding guide for Smithsonian Tours, and for some 25 years, he was director of the South Shore Sanctuaries of Mass Audubon here in Massachusetts. And David, they just reached a big milestone there.
Yeah, when I was sanctuary director here in the South Shore Sanctuaries in the coastal part of Massachusetts, for those who aren't here, between Boston and Plymouth, you get stuck in the office a lot. And we were doing public programs, and I thought, wouldn't it be nice if I could get out birding for half a day every week? So we started a thing called Friday Morning Bird Walk. And last Friday, this past Friday, a couple days ago, was the 30th anniversary, 30 years of Friday Morning Birdwalk. And given the winter weather and all that sort of thing, we've probably averaged 49 or 50 walks a year, a couple cancellations. Mm-hmm. So that's probably 1,500 birdwalks that have been done in a row in this area. And David Ludlow, the property manager for Audubon up here, has continued the program. It's really quite wonderful.
Nice. And it's a few hundred of those bird walks with your footprints.
Absolutely. Probably, well, I've been out of it now for 7 or 8 years, maybe 10 years. And so David's probably done more than I have now.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this is a big year for anniversaries. We got the National Park Service, which we're celebrating a lot, 100 years. I think Mass Audubon is having an anniversary this year.
120 years.
120. Cornell Lab of Ornithology, 100 years, I think, last year. In 2015. Well, one place that's pretty much always warm and now getting hot in a different way is Cuba, really beginning to open up. Even cruise ships are traveling there from the U.S. And David, maybe that's why a Cuban bird has shown up in the U.S. for the first time ever, as far as we know, maybe trying to escape the visitor onslaught.
Yeah.
A Cuban vireo in Key West, Florida.
Cuban vireo,
yeah. It's kind of a big deal, right?
It is a big deal. Key West and the Keys themselves reach pretty far south. And any time there's a storm that comes from the southeast, it has the potential to blow some vagrant or some explorer from Cuba toward Florida. Mm-hmm. And occasionally things get found. Thick-billed kingbirds get found and a few others that are off and on sort of regular, you know, mm-hmm. even if they're only once every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, the vireo is brand new, never been seen here before. Cuba has 23 endemic species and mm-hmm. another 26 that are nearly endemic, mm-hmm. only on Cuba and one adjacent island. So that's 50 or 60 birds that have evolved separately just on Cuba.
Wow. Well, I know you're getting ready to, you're planning to head down there pretty soon as a birder rather than as a typical tourist, and we'll talk more about that in a few minutes here. Meanwhile, if you're anywhere in the Northeast U.S., we hope you'll mark Sunday, May 29th on your calendar and plan to join us as we broadcast our Talkin' Bird show live from the second annual L.L. Bean Birding Festival in Freeport, Maine. That's Sunday morning, May 29th, 9:30 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. We'll be right by the Big Boot at the L.L. Bean flagship store.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Here are some of the stories and videos we have for you on our Facebook page this week. Here's one. There's something fishy about this fossil. Prehistoric pellets provide proof about what prehistoric birds ate and how they ate it. And speaking of food, why some birds eat dirt. We'll link you to that story. You probably maybe know what that's about already. And as we mentioned in a Facebook preview about today's show, there's a lady in Europe who's trying to save swans by becoming one, or at least by flying with them in something called a paramotor, essentially a powered parachute. Her name is Sasha Dench, and she'll be a guest here on an upcoming Talkin' Birds show. Some of the things there on our Facebook page. If you're not a Facebooker, you can find more stories right on our TalkinBirds.com website. In our Talkin' Birds blog this week, our Debbie Bleacher explains that the dodo may not have been such a dodo after all. New evidence suggests that this disrespected bird may have been smarter than we thought. That's on our blog this week, easily found at TalkinBirds.com. Still to come on our show today, we'll talk to the Sultan of Seed, the Baron of the Backyard, Mike O'Connor from the Birdwatchers General Store on Cape Cod, about when or if you should stop feeding birds as spring advances, that we just talked about a few minutes ago. We'll talk about Cuban birds with David Clapp here in the studio with us. And in just a moment, a bird that will soon arrive on its breeding grounds in Canada and parts of the northern U.S., is today's Talkin' Birds featured feathered friend. Talkin' Birds is made possible in part by Celestron, a leading optics company offering binoculars and spotting scopes for birders of all levels. Celestron is dedicated to education and bird conservation and proudly supports many nonprofit organizations that share the same commitment. Celestron says, "We care about birds and nature in our backyard as well as yours." Enhance your view with Celestron. Visit celestron.com and discover more.
A Zuni Indian legend, holds that today's featured feathered friend got its speckled plumage when its ancestors spilled white foam on themselves because they were laughing at a coyote who was trying to join a ceremonial dance. Hopi Indians see our friend as their god of the dead, the guardian of fires, and the tenders of all underground things, including the germination of seeds. Their name for this bird is Koko, or Watcher of the Dark. And a common myth suggests that this underground-dwelling bird shares its burrows with rattlesnakes. Although that's not true, our bird does often use a burrow previously occupied by prairie dogs, skunks, armadillos, or tortoises when it doesn't excavate its own. So what bird would this be? Why, none other than Athene cunicularia, the burrowing owl. It's a small owl, about 8 to 10 inches in length or height, with long legs and a short tail. It's mostly brown with light-colored spots on the back and bars on the front and bright yellow eyes. It's often seen during the day, although it hunts at night too, tending to capture mammals in the dark and insects in daylight. Here in the U.S., it's an open country bird of the West and Southwest and most of Florida, where it's the official bird of the city of Cape Coral, home to some 2,500 burrows and the annual Burrowing Owl Festival. The Burrowing Owl, Athene cunicularia, today's Talkin' Birds featured feathered friend.
Thanks again for being with us here on our show number 574. As always, we invite you to visit our website, talkinbirds.com, no G in talkin', and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Talkin' Birds. Talkin' Birds is sponsored in part by Chimani, providing free outdoor mobile app travel guides to plan and navigate your journey to more than 400 national parks, monuments, and historic sites. From Acadia to Zion, go to Chimani.com, that's Chimani.com, to locate or download your free app today. We've located David Clapp. He's still here in the studio here. Thanks for sticking around.
That's a pleasure.
Yeah. I know you're going to be going south somewhere pretty soon. Could we have a little Cuban music, please? There we go. You're in the mood now. You're definitely not going to cancel that trip.
The only time in all my tours I've ever lost a client, a person, was at a Cuban restaurant in Key West, Florida.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. She was in the car, got out, went back into the bathroom. We left. It was probably about 15 minutes later, maybe 7 or 8 miles, her husband finally said, does anyone know where my wife is? We're thinking, you know.
Wow.
So apparently he got the break he needed. And we eventually went back and got her. She was an unhappy person.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, at least.
You did get her, though.
We did eventually, yeah.
Eventually. Yeah. I always think going on some of these tours with all these people that you have to keep track of.
It can be a problem.
That must be the hardest part of doing it.
Yeah, the people are the hardest part.
If you could just do a tour without any people.
I know.
Just the birds.
Wouldn't it be fun? Yeah. Maybe I'll invent that. Call it vacation.
Yeah. I like that. Vacation. The light bulb just went off.
Cuba has been a birding destination probably for 25 years now. People have gone through Jamaica. They've gone through Toronto to get down to Cuba.
Yeah.
And you could always go and get a special visa, separate sheet of paper. You didn't get your passport stamp because if when you came back to the States they saw a Cuban stamp, you would be in trouble. And a couple of birders I know, thought it would be fun just to have it in his passport. So he did get the stamp in his passport, and then he paid a big fine when the U.S. immigration people found it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a while ago. That was 20 years ago. But still, it was something you didn't do. But anyway, birders have been going there. There's only half a dozen prime locations. The North Shore of Cuba has been pretty well developed, and it's European. A lot of Dutch and Canadians go to the hotels along the North Shore. The North Shore is really developed in a modern sort of resortish way. Mm-hmm. The southern side and out toward Guantanamo, toward the eastern end, there's still a lot of open space, a lot of wild space. And there's only about half a dozen destinations to get to. One of the problems has always been in Cuba, going your own would be to rent a car and to find accommodations. So you almost always had to go with a group. But those things are changing a little bit now. They're changing more rapidly for the vacationer than for the birding vacationer. But still, there's only a few places to go to see the... I mean to create a list. I don't mean just to go. You can go all over Cuba.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to do your bird list and see all the endemics and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. then there's really only five or six destinations you'd include in your itinerary.
Now, you mentioned Guantanamo. That's not a place you can, you know, get to very easily or at all. I don't know.
No, you don't want to actually get into or near Guantanamo. But that area, that eastern end, has a couple large swamps and big areas that are quite attractive to birders, at least.
Well, Tim Gallagher from Cornell Lab of Ornithology, who may have rediscovered the ivory bill in Arkansas a few years ago. I guess most people now think that didn't really happen.
Probably it was a misidentification. It's sad because we were very hopeful.
Yeah, people really were pretty convinced there for a while, and I think Tim Gallagher is still convinced of that, but he's been kind of on a mission ever since then to find this bird somewhere. You know, he searched for the imperial woodpecker in Mexico and wasn't able to find that bird, but he wrote a terrific book about it called Imperial Dreams. He's going to be with us at L.L. Bean, by the way, at the end of this month up in Freeport, Maine. But he's in Cuba now, I think, and he's looking for the ivory-billed woodpecker in Cuba, which is what? I guess the last possible place?
It's the last possible place. There's been a lot of forestry work done in Cuba in the last 30, 40 years. And this has been an area that's been very difficult to access and very difficult to explore once you access it. And so there's no real solid reports of ivory bill still persisting there, but it is the last place. It's a race of ivory bill that has always been seen as a geographic separate race, separate population from ours. But it is an ivory bill, and it is probably the last place on Earth that they really still might be ivory bills.
Yeah, that would be so cool.
It would be.
If they did.
Spectacular bird. When I was at Sharon Mass up at the Moose Hill Wildlife Sanctuary when I first started, we had in this little museum, this was an early sanctuary, started in 1917, and we had Carolina parakeet, passenger pigeon, and ivory-billed woodpecker under glass, you know, glass tubes from those eras. Something.
David Clapp is here with us in the studio, and he'll stay with us, and we're going to, maybe you can consult with us when we do our mystery bird contest, David, and then you can have a little conversation with Mike O'Connor, because he'll be with us here.
I'd love both of those.
All right. Well, those are coming up, and our mystery bird contest is here in just 1 minute.
Here's an idea for the next time you're shopping for wild bird food. Look for the Audubon Park brand, a top choice among bird lovers for more than 40 years. That's because Audubon Park wild bird seed is the finest kind, with more than a dozen selections to choose from, including the popular fruit and nut, songbird and cardinal, and no-waste patio blends. Human development and climate change are having increasing impacts on wild birds. Feeding the hummers, chickadees, goldfinches, cardinals, and all the beautiful and fascinating birds in your backyard really helps them survive and thrive. All of Audubon Park's products meet the highest quality standards in the industry and have earned early compliance with the FDA's Food Safety Modernization Act. And Audubon Park products are easy to find at your supermarket, lawn and garden store, farm and feed market, and online retailers. For more information, visit AudubonPark.com. That's AudubonPark.com. Audubon Park wild bird food is made right here in the USA. Get some for your backyard birds today. Audubon Park wild bird food.
Talking Birds is made possible in part by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, a world leader in the study, appreciation, and conservation of birds. Please check them out at birds.cornell.edu, and you're eligible on the Mystery Bird Contest. If you haven't been a winner here in the past 6 months on Talking Birds, and if you're not hearing our Sunday morning show live, don't forget you can hear us live every Sunday morning, 9:30 to 10 Eastern Time online. And you can just go to talkingbirds.com and see how easy it is to do that. Our Mystery Bird Contest phone number, this is the important part because we run out of time here sometimes on our 30-minute show, so we urge you to call early as you can. Take a guess at the bird because if we get no correct answer, a drawing will determine our winner. Or if you know what it is, by all means, tell us at 781-837-4900. 781-837-4900. Our prize this morning is a beautiful Droll Yankees smoke-tinged observer window feeder. Everybody loves window feeders. The birds come right up to your kitchen window or wherever. You could attach that to the window using three suction cups that really do keep it on there. You can put seed, fruit, or mealworms in there. You could put lug nuts in there if you wanted to. We don't recommend that, but it's going to be your feeder if you win our mystery bird contest. So you can do whatever you like. 781-837-4900 is the number to call. Here's the sound of our mystery bird. This might be a tough one, David.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
This is a tough one, but we're going to give you some powerful clues here. And so take advantage. Our mystery bird is a small, drably colored songbird with a green back, whitish underparts, a gray crown, and a thin white line over the eyes. Here's the powerful hint. Our bird is named after a U.S. state. No, it's not the Colorado clapper or even the David clapper. It's named after a U.S. state, though, and even though it breeds way up in the boreal forests of Canada, I think some parts of the northern U.S., David, right?
Like perhaps,
Michigan,
yeah. I think, yeah.
Something like that? Northern Michigan?
Northern Maine probably has.
Northern
some.
Maine? Yeah. Okay, but it's way up there anyway for breeding, where it specializes in eating the spruce budworm. Have you ever eaten a spruce budworm?
I never have, David? No. I look forward to the opportunity.
All right. Well, you know, eating insects is getting to be a big thing, I think, in some experimental restaurants.
I'm still putting it off.
All right, wait till it gets more established. 781-837-4900 is the number to call on our Mystery Bird Contest. 781-837-4900. Our prize, the Droll Yankees Smoke-Tinged Observer Window feeder, that beautiful feeder that fastens right on your window. You get that close, unobstructed view of birds. If you don't know what that bird is, well, take a guess. Pick a state, if you're not sure, and give us a call. I'm sure there are quite a few states that don't have any birds named for
them. That's right. This is
them.
A good time to start a new trend.
Yeah. If you're in, where would there be
Wyoming water thrush.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Or the Nebraska noddy. How about that?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Unlikely, but yeah.
781-837-4900. Take a guess or tell us what it is on our Mystery Bird Contest and win that beautiful Droll Yankees Observer window feeder. Meanwhile, we're going to check in with Mike O'Connor. It's Let's Ask Mike Live coming up in just 1 minute.
Hi, this is Scott Whitensall, naturalist and author of Living on the Wind. Like me, you probably love this time of the year, when the birds that fill our summer with song and color return for another season. But there are fewer and fewer of them every year. Fortunately, one of the easiest and most effective ways to conserve high-quality songbird habitat in Latin America is to drink shade-grown coffee that carries the bird-friendly certification of the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. Birds and Beans is the only brand that sells only bird-friendly coffee. It's USDA organic certified, and also certified as fair trade, so whether you're concerned about bird conservation, environmental health, or social justice, it's the right choice. And it's delicious coffee. Best of all, Bird Friendly is the most stringent shade coffee certification program in the world, so you know that your purchase is directly conserving critical habitat for the warblers, thrushes, and other beautiful birds that make this time of the year such a delight. Thanks. The birds will be grateful.
Let's have that Mike theme music here. There it is. Mike refuses to come on unless we play the music, so there it is. He also refused to come on because David Clapp was going to be here with us, but we've got him to change his mind about that, I think. Are you there, Mike? Maybe not,
Oops,
David.
Maybe not.
He didn't change. Oh, there he is. I think I heard him.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes
Dave
he
Brown,
just...
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Michael.
David, do you have your own theme music?
I do. But
you
I don't sit on the porch of Birdwatchers General Store and play it like you do.
Well, we played that Cuban music. You can have that
as
your
right.
theme for now, anyway.
I heard you trashing me for being on every week. Try being in the country once in a while. Maybe you'd be on for a while.
Hey, Mike, we talked earlier in the show about feeding birds at this time of the year and whether you should stop feeding them. And aside from the fact that you want to sell more bird seed, you have some thoughts about that. I know you always say that at least one of the reasons we feed birds, maybe the biggest reason, is so we can look at them. And, well, this is a pretty good time to look at them.
Well, that and to pay my bills.
Right, of course.
Because every time somebody takes their features in, I die a little inside. No, I do get that question a lot, especially in the, you know, traditionally May is a warmer month. We're not getting that right now, but people feel inclined, well, the tough winter is over now, maybe we'll take the feeders in. But I always tell them, like what you said, Ray, is it's really about our entertainment, and we do it kind of for ourselves. But I always say, if you're going to feed birds any time of year, May is the time. It seems odd, but now is when we get birds coming through that we traditionally don't see. So people now are likely to get, like, maybe indigo buntings or purple finches or blue grosbeaks or some rose-breasted grosbeaks and birds that we don't often see in our yards. And so if you're going to do it and you want something a little bit special, I would keep doing it at least through May. Then when June hits and those bugs that David was talking about before become plentiful, and the birds kind of ignore feeders, but I would continue on a few more weeks.
All right, a few more weeks through May and see those birds you might not see any other time.
That's it.
And help you pay the bills.
That's really the key.
Thank you, Mike.
Talk to you guys later. Thanks a lot.
Talk to you next week.
Bye, Mike.
We're back here now at the Mystery Bird Contest. 781-837-4900 is the number. We're trying to identify this mystery bird. Our description of that mystery bird. If I could find my mystery bird sheet, I would be able to do
three,
that.
Here three trills in a row, different pace, different sound.
Yeah, got good way.
Heard from the top of a tree, usually behind a leaf. You almost never see this bird.
These are bonus tips that David is providing here. In addition to the fact that it's a drably colored songbird, a small bird with a green back, whitish underparts, gray crown, thin white line over the eyes. And our bird is named after a U.S. state, even though it breeds way up in the boreal forests of Canada, maybe northern Maine or northern Michigan. Specializes in eating the spruce budworm. What is it? 781-837-4900 is the number. I think we have Diane somewhere in the great state of North Carolina. Good morning, Diane.
Hi, we do. And with your latest little hints, I'm probably wrong. I was going to say a Carolina wren.
Oh, that was, with our latest hints, now you're wrong. We shouldn't have given you those latest hints then, I guess. No, not a Carolina wren, but a nice plug for Carolina, even though it's generically Carolina and not North Carolina necessarily. You should have a bird that called the North Carolina something.
That's right.
You know?
Okay. Well, we tried.
You try again, Diane. Whereabouts in North Carolina are you, by the way?
I'm in Oriental. It's on the inner coast of North Carolina.
Sounds beautiful down there.
It is. My daughter is out in Silva in the western part, in the mountains.
Okay. Yeah, that's the opposite end.
Blue Ridge Parkway. Yep.
Thank you, Diane.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Linda in Plimpton, Massachusetts. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
Say hello to David Clapp. He's here giving extra clues on the mystery bird.
Hi, David. I go up to the South Shore Audubon place. I've taken a couple of...
Friday mornings.
Yep. No, not Friday morning. Oh. I did the Owls and Omelets.
Oh,
recently.
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
That's a good program if it works.
Owls and Omelets. That probably
walking
bears
or getting up early
that.
And walking around with no owls could be disappointing, but
it was still fun.
Oh, good.
All right. What about our mystery bird, Linda?
How about the Tennessee Warbler?
Oh,
wow, that sounds pretty good there. The audience
way to
agrees.
Go.
Tennessee Warbler is correct. Nice job.
Thanks.
Hey, stay on the line, Linda. We'll get your address and send you that beautiful Droll Yankees feeder.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. We're just about out of time. A quick reminder, one of America's great birding events is coming soon, the Acadia Birding Festival at beautiful Acadia National Park in Maine, June 1st to June 7th. For birders of all levels with field trips, workshops, presentations, and a special pelagic seabird boat trip. Find out more at AcadiaBirdingFestival.com. That's AcadiaBirdingFestival.com. Next week, the Patuxent National Wildlife Refuge's own Ken Lavish will be with us. The topic, some good news about whooping cranes. And David, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Ray. Thank you.
David Clapp, heading soon to Cuba. We'll look forward to some reports from Guantanamo.
See.
Okay. Executive producer of Talking Birds, Mark Duffield. Our associate producer, Debbie Bleacher. Our engineer, Larry Nelson. I'm Ray Brown. See you next week.
Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store. Orleans Cape Cod. Birdwatchersgeneralstore.com. by L.L. Bean, inspiring you to get outdoors. LLBean.com. By Celestron, offering binoculars and scopes for birders of all levels. Celestron.com. By Birds and Beans shade-grown, bird-friendly coffee. Birdsandbeans.com. And by Chimani. Visiting a national park? Let Chimani guide you. Chimani.com.